And some of them, you know, some of them have differing opinions, but, you know, just to keep on talking and just keep those lines of communication open, I think does a world of good and, you know, gets them to the point where they realize that there is something more than playing video games and professional sports and all the things that are used to distract the general population from what's really going on.
Well, right. As long as, I mean, you know, God forbid, I don't have anything against anybody watching a football game. I wasn't on the air Friday night, and as a consequence of that, I sat and watched my beloved Mountaineers flush their football season down the toilet. But then again, I shouldn't, you know, I should probably not complain to you. It's a tough year to live in South Bend, my friend. But you know, I don't begrudge anybody any of that. I don't begrudge anybody any entertainment. But it's the line. There's a line that needs to be established or drawn somewhere between reality and that.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, it's just, you know, what is entertainment and what is,
well, you know,
it's really going to vastly affect your life for generations to come.
I clicked on my happy little homepage button. And it just, you know, I've never changed it. It just goes to some site, and bang, there it is. What's the lead story? Woman killed in Phoenix in handcuffs? No, that wasn't the lead story. The slaughter in Burma? No, sorry, that wasn't the lead story either. The lead story? Brittany loses custody. And you know, I know that Dave Letterman was a little bit harsh on Paris Hilton the other night on his show. And whether that was right or wrong, I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, where do we get the idea, Gerard, that these people are any more real than a guy who actually, or woman who goes out and earns a living? You can't look at what Britney Spears did at the Video Music Awards and call that earning a living.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the cultural issue, is somehow or another figuring out what does and does not matter. OJ doesn't matter. Britney doesn't matter. Lindsay Lohan doesn't matter. But I guess, you know, some of it ties in. Who was it? Who was the English philosopher who said that most people lead lives of quiet desperation?
Henry David Thoreau.
Was that Thoreau? I thought it was an Englishman. Okay, well, I stand corrected. And Pink
Thoreau
Floyd.
Maybe
I'm twisted by Pink Floyd, who turned that into "Hanging on in quiet desperation is the English way." But at any rate, maybe, you know, maybe it's that desperate desire to look out of our own desperate lives that that creates our fascination. And you know, there's nothing new in it. It was the Fatty Arbuckle trial in the 20s or whatever. There's always been something to grab our attention away from what is immediately to hand. Some people drink to get away from what is immediately at hand. Other people, you know, Rush Limbaugh chewed up OxyContins to get the refreshing burst of flavor because he couldn't stand his own reality.
Yeah. Well, just, I would have to say that's where I'm with Phil from Daytona, too, is that, you know, there's a flap now because Rush said, you know, he's calling certain military people phony soldiers. Well, what, you know, it's been 20 years. What else do we expect from Rush? You know, let's not have a week of, you know, discourse and flying, you know, words flying back and forth about this. And I'm not, and I don't mean to belittle it, and what he said was appalling, but I would rather see people putting energy into getting their, you know, local state representative to their state legislature, getting someone in there who's, you know, supportive of a liberal progressive agenda and not worry about what Rush is saying.
But that roller coaster is already out of the station, Gerard. To the same extent that Harry Reid denounced Rush on the floor of the Senate yesterday, and Mark Udall of Colorado was said to have introduced a resolution in the House condemning him, yada, yada, yada. Well, now there's a right-wing, and I mean this guy's an uber freak, okay? Jack Kingston from Georgia has introduced a resolution commending Rush Limbaugh in the House of Representatives. So now we're going to have the battle of commendations versus commendations. Or condemnations, and what I'd really rather see is a full frontal Democratic assault with all teeth bared on the $190 billion that George Bush wants to perpetuate the ongoing slaughter of our people and Iraqi people. That's the debate we need to have in the House and the Senate, not move on, not Rush Limbaugh. That is that's beneath the dignity of the Congress, either of those issues.
The same thing happened today with that hearing with Blackwater. You know, there was so much time spent with, you know, partisan bickering back and forth. And we even got to the point where, you know, there was one Republican congressman having an exchange with Henry Waxman about, okay, who brought up that Eric Prince is a, you know, has ties to the Republican Party, you know, and they're going back and forth. It's like children. You know, you have this time, you've got the witness here, you have this time, let's get as best information from him as possible to make it some kind of discernment whether this whole mercenary scenario is going to continue to play out.
Well, Gerard, I hearken back. You talk about them acting like children. I hearken back to, you know, the bad old days of law school or whatever. You know, I'm not like Mark. I didn't go to Yale, but, you know, I went to a law school. You know, I signed up for it on the back of a matchbook one night in a drunken stupor, and the next thing you know, I'm 1L. But they teach you things like cross-examination and how to ask leading questions and how to deal with a hostile witness. You know, most of the great trial lawyers in America are liberals and Democrats. Because, right. You know, they're thinking people. I would love to see the congressional leadership on the Democratic side bring in some of these hotshot trial lawyers to just do a 7-day seminar with the Democratic members of Congress and teach them how to cross-examination a doggone witness.
Yeah. Well,
you know, never mind the statement. You know, everybody, you know, you've got X number of minutes to you've got X number of minutes to question the witness, and so you use half of that making a long, droning, boring statement. Never mind that. Don't do that. Go read some, you know, go read some Cicero. Go read some classics. Read what he did in the trial of Verus. He forewent. Is that a word? He forewent the long, droning, boring oration part of it, and just started in on the witnesses and started in on the accused and drilled him and drilled him and drilled him. Never mind the statements. You want to make a statement with the questions you're asking, because that's how you elicit the information. And then if the sucker is under oath, he's really on the hot seat, and you ask leading question after leading question after leading question, because these Bush administration freaks are all hostile witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
well,
I'm off my soapbox now.
Well, even one of the last congressmen, congresswomen, or congresspersons to have their turn was Congresswoman Norton from the District of Columbia, and she was the first one to bring up the word mercenary. I mean, there were at least 8 or 10 congresspeople, Democratic congresspeople, who wouldn't even bring up that word.
They're terrified, Gerard. They're afraid that somebody's going to start a campaign that says, Democrats don't support the contractors.
Yeah. So, well, and the guy's sitting right there. He's sitting right there, and he says, you know, all my folks who work for my company, they all bleed red, white, and blue. And then, you know,
except
later,
the ones from El Salvador who bleed whatever flag that color is, and the ones from South Africa who are the old apartheid knee busters.
Yeah. And you know, that's an obvious contradiction in his testimony. But, you know, it doesn't come out until almost the end of the hearing.
Well, it's a pity. It's a pity.
I'm
more.
Let you roll on, Bob.
All right, Gerard. I really have enjoyed our conversation. I hope we'll hear from you again soon. Okay.
Okay. Ask the right winger why the president's got to know my personal health information.
Yeah.
I'd really like to know.
It's because the terrorists hate your mama and your Bible. We'll talk to you later, Gerard.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Okay, let's roll on. I don't know who's on hold, but we're about to find out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Susan.
First of all, I'm HIPAA certified, so I know a little bit about this. Your previous caller, his medical information is private from no one in the government. The only person it's private from is him.
I know. Yeah.
If they want it for any reason, doesn't have to be a threat. You know, they could just decide, let's see what's wrong with him today.
Yeah.
They can dig it up. You know, that's written into the laws. But he can't look at his own information, which doesn't seem to make much sense to me, but then what the heck?
No, if you were having if you were going through a bad spell and you went to a counselor or a psychologist or something, try to get those records.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they can get them all.
No, but you can't.
Oh, yeah, I know. Anyway, I thought I'd call and tell you about a little incident.
Okie dokie.
I'm sitting down at the VA today while hubby's seeing the doctor.
Everything okay with hubby?
Well, other than the fact that he has cancer, sure.
I'm trying, Susan.
Yeah, I know. He's got surgery scheduled on him. He's got skin cancer. Stay out of the sun if you're smart. You'll pay for it if you don't. He's in with the doctor, and I'm sitting there, trying to figure out something to do. And they came around, and here's the Oregonian, the Portland newspaper. So I get up, and I start reading. And there is this article on impeachment. Because apparently the local protesters are making one of the local congresspeople really uncomfortable. They're camping outside of his office.
Good.
With balloons and T-shirts and everything, and yelling, impeach, impeach. Anyway, these Democrats are saying, we can't impeach for the following reason.
Do I need to get my bucket?
Yeah. We can't impeach because then the GOP won't work with this anymore.
Well, we certainly need to work with the GOP, don't we? The grand old perverts.
Yeah, and I'm going, right about then, I lose it right in the middle of the waiting room of the frimpin' VA hospital. And I'm going, what do you mean work with them?
We have got to have bipartisan support for these measures. We want to reach across the aisles and create a unified America and fight the divisions which we have been subjected to. We need to work together as Americans. We're all Americans. We all love our country. Here, let us reach across the... What the hell? I just drew back a bloody stump.
Yeah. The Republicans are obstructing even the stuff they're in favor of.
Yeah. Sure. That's what they do. Politics is more important
than
patriotism, than country.
And I'm going, you stupid idiot. By the way, the statement was attributed to Earl Blumenauer of Oregon. Call him up and tell him he's an idiot. And then call up Nancy and tell her she has a new last name.
Which is? Come on.
Chamberlain.
Yeah, I know. I thought maybe it was going to be Nancy Capitulosi.
That's pretty good, though. That's really good.
Right off the cuff, Susan. It's only because I'm highly trained broadcast professional.
I couldn't believe it.
Nancy Capitulosi, though, that one's got potential.
Yeah, that does. And another reason they said that they would not impeach is because they didn't want the American public turning on them. And how many times do I have to tell you idiots, the reason the American people turned on the Republicans is because they impeached Bill Clinton and they didn't want him impeached.
Yeah, but isn't the argument then that the American people don't want George Bush impeached either?
No, the American public want him tossed out of office. We can imagine the taste it.
Smells like a ribeye on the grill. It just makes my mouth water thinking about impeachment.
Oh, yeah. Next time we go down to the VA, mm-hmm. I'm walking. I don't know how this is going to go over, but I'm going to march in there wearing an impeached Bush T-shirt.
Well, you know, why not?
Oh, and there is a little bit of light beginning to show. I'm going down the road last Sunday down to this local big department store. Beep, 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 beep. And lo and behold, out of the blue, here on the side of the road, where never had one before, is an anti-war demonstration.
Good. Good.
And apparently they're going to be there every Sunday. So I decided, well, come Sunday, I'm going to go down and see if they want some help.
Absolutely. Good on you. Good on you. Hey, Susan, I think I've got one more person on hold, and I'm getting all a titter about my right winger at 8:05, so, or, you know, let's see, 5:05 your time.
Oh, you got a right winger? I just came in at after 4, so this is going to be cool.
Yeah, well, I hope it is. I'm sitting here doing my internal mantra of I will not scream, I will not scream, I will not scream. Bob will not scream. Bob will be tranquil. Bob will be peaceful. Bob will be nice.
Go ahead and scream.
I'm going to try not to, but that's no guarantee. Hey, Susan, our best to Hubby, please. Tell him we love him and we're thinking about him, and we trust that things will be well with getting that stuff excised from his hide. Having had things excised from hide, from my hide recently, I do know that it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Or the side, or the rib cage, or wherever it happens to be.
Wherever it is.
Yeah.
My best to Agnes.
All right. Thank you, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Our good friend Susan, News Ninja Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Okay, let's see if this is actually a caller. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? Anybody there? Okie dokie, you gave up. So, you know, it's about 7 minutes, 6.5 minutes before the hour. Tell you a little bit about our guest coming up. I was offered this guest. The title of the email pitching his appearance is Media Matters Attack on Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh and Others Interview Opportunity. And Mr. Jack Thomas, who coined the phrase non-normie. Are you listening, Dr. Rick? I'm going to be needing you here, brother. Non-normie is a person who is fueled by anger and controlled by hate. And he has written a column about the polar left non-normie media network. Got that? And he says, earlier last week, Bill O'Reilly was castigated by Media Matters, the website that brought down Don Imus, for supposed racist comments that he made on his radio show. He was having a frank discussion about racial tension and attitudes in America, even citing his own grandmother's innate but unjustified fear of blacks. O'Reilly's guest was Juan Williams, a noted fair black commentator. Why do we have to mention that Juan Williams is black? Why does that have to be modified by the word fair? But that's me. Media Matters, who often works in conjunction with MoveOn.org and godless communist demonic baby eaters, totally distorted Bill's comments. Oh. And that distortion was subsequently picked up by CNN and reported as fact. The local ABC affiliate in New York perpetuated the fallacious story. Fallacious? Can you say fallacious in Alabama where you can't buy a sex toy? I don't know. Without checking it out. Following this, the New York Daily News, the CBS Early Show, the Chicago Sun-Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, ABCNews.com, the Louisville Journal, the Today Show, Newsday, and Stephen A. Smith of ESPN reported and perpetuated the lie. Lie? Lie? Well, you know, that's one of the things we're going to do coming up. I'm going to have a very nice, what I hope will be a very nice conversation with Mr. Thomas. And we're going to play the lie. We're going to listen to it. Unmonkeyed with, unfooled with, and we'll just find out whether or not it's as dishonest as he says. That's all I want to find out. Okay, someone has rung in. Let's see if you stayed with us. Hi, who have I got?
Jim.
Hey, Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good, how you doing?
I'm getting ready for my right-wing interview.
Well, I wish you the very best of luck with him.
I haven't fought with a right-winger since Calvin used to call back in the bad old terrestrial radio days.
Oh, God. Well, that's going to be your cadaver for the evening. But, you know, I want to say one thing in defense of Don Imus, and I know people are going to hate me for this, and you probably might say, but I like Don Imus. And I remember that at least three out of every five broadcasts he had on his air, he was always wanting to kick George Bush's ass out of office. He constantly was railing for him to be impeached.
Well, maybe you've identified a separate and unstated reason for getting rid of him.
Well,
you know, from the other side. Maybe that's why people came together. He was too dangerous to George Bush, and at the same time, you know, the racism was more than people could stomach.
Well, that comment, I'm not going to get into that. I mean, Imus would get a little time, but I enjoyed the guy's show, and he was in many ways diverse. But in all fairness to him, I didn't agree with a lot of what he said, and I used to email him all the time, and he used to try to, he even made an announcement that he knew some guy somewhere that he was going to get Bo Deedle to come down there and kick my ass. But anyway, you know, Bo Deedle's that guy who was on his show all the time, who the one tough cop, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, Imus did do, you know, he had some good reportage on there. And he did make a lot of statements that really are in parallel with what some of you and some of your people say. I kind of miss the guy in a way. I really do.
What Imus did was Imus's so-called shtick. He never put himself out there as a political pundit as O'Reilly does. And I don't think these right-wingers, because they think very much like O'Reilly does, Jim, they don't understand why a comment like, I went into Sylvia's in Harlem and it was just like any other restaurant in New York City except it was run by blacks. You know, I don't think they understand why that's disgusting.
I know.
I mean, it's like when some guy in the yachting cap at the country club looks at you and says, well, you know, some of my best friends are Negroes. It's demeaning. It's condescending. It's revolting.
Well, unfortunately, that's just the way of, Don. That's just the way. I mean, excuse me, Bob. That's just the way a lot of people feel. I don't know why. I don't understand it. But anyway, that's something that's going to take a long time.
We got a long way to go, Jim. We got a long way to go.
But you know, in defense of Mr. Imus, I mean, he did have his good points. He does have his good points. I didn't like his wife too much because I thought she was still one of the pain in the rear end, but. You know, they're both trying to do some good things with kids with cancer and autism and stuff like that. And he did make a positive contribution. And, you know, one thing I got to say about the guy, you know, he admitted he was an alcoholic and drug addict and everything like that. He did his best he could, and he could there. And his own way to help, rough and crude though it may have been, he was a lot better than some of the other idiots you see on Fox News and things like that. And he always was kicking Fox News in the butt. Always.
Yep.
He really was.
Yeah.
I used to watch him every day, so I mean, I know wherever I speak. And I won't give the devil his due. I don't think he's the devil, really, but I think he's a pretty good fellow.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. We're going to go to the news, and then God only knows what will happen. I may open my mouth and bats will fly out.
Well, now, I don't think that'll be necessary, but you just handle him with, however you want to handle him.
My usual aplomb.
Right, with kids, silk stockings, and a lavalier, as Mae West used to say.
Oh, God, not Mae West. Thanks, Jim.
Bye.
Bye now. So we'll be back with Jack Thomas here in a little bit. I kid. I'm a nice guy. I've never been rude to anybody on this program that I'm aware of. So, you know, God knows what kind of information we might pull out of the situation. This is America's liberal voice. This is the media that you make. This is the Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Washington lawmakers consider a House bill that would require President Bush to show a concrete plan for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. The bill does not set a timetable for pulling troops out, and Republican leaders say they won't oppose it. The head of private security contractor Blackwater defended his staff before a House Oversight and Government Reform Committee today. He told the committee they acted appropriately at all times. His testimony comes as the FBI investigation continues into a Blackwater shootout last month in Iraq that killed 11. A Washington Post ABC News poll shows only about 25% of Americans support the administration's $190 billion war funding request. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown is visiting Iraq for the first time. He's meeting with authorities to discuss a drawdown of Britain's 5,000 troops in southern Iraq. That would have 1,000 of them home by Christmas. Violence in Iraq declined, according to a report out yesterday, but a UN report out today finds that attacks in Afghanistan have risen by 20%. They are now at the highest level since the 2001 U.S.-led invasion. For only the second time in 50 years, the leaders of South and North Korea met today for peace talks. Talks centered on Pyongyang's nuclear weaponry program and its shutdown. A United Nations envoy left Myanmar after finally being allowed to meet with the country's leader. No progress, though, was reported in swaying the regime from a brutal government crackdown on a peaceful pro-democracy movement. In Islamabad, opposition lawmakers resigned today, protesting Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf's bid for a second five-year term. Other candidates for the office also took their course to the country's case to the country's Supreme Court, asking that it disqualify Musharraf because he's chief of the country's army. The trial of seven men who allegedly plotted to bomb landmark buildings, including the Sears Tower in Chicago, got underway in Miami today. Prosecution says the men were trying to bring down the U.S. government. They face up to 70 years in prison if convicted. In Minnesota, opening arguments began today in the first trial of a consumer accused of copyright violation for illegally sharing songs on a file-sharing network. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Do you know the expression, put on your best face? Never was that suggestion more important, especially in the increasingly fast-paced world of the Internet. The people at Byte Technology are experts in making sure that the hits their clients' websites receive turn into a satisfying visit and more business. Byte gets to the core of every business and brings the heart of the operation to the Internet. Whether you are selling products or services, reaching out for new business, or supplying information to a sector of the business community, it is vital that you attract the right visitors and deliver them what they need quickly and effectively. Byte Technology goes further, providing maintenance updates to keep your site ahead of the curve, ahead of the competition. Assure your company's future. Talk with the team at Byte Technology to learn how you can put on your best internet face. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
According to a report by the Associated Press, laboratory accidents involving deadly viruses and poisonous chemicals are on the rise. The number of laboratories approved to handle deadly substances has doubled in the last 3 years. Nokia will pay $8.1 billion to acquire digital mapmaker Navtech. Navtech's maps are used primarily in automobile navigation systems. eBay announced it will take a $1.43 billion charge as a result of its acquisition of internet phone company Skype. In addition, Skype's CEO will leave his active position. Chocolate maker Hershey named its COO to take over from its present CEO, Richard Lenny, who just announced yesterday that he would retire December 1st. Sales of Fords have dropped 21% in September, while Toyota and Chrysler posted smaller drops and GM held steady. Honda sales increased more than 9% and Nissan gained 7%. Gold is trading at $736.36 an ounce. That's down $17.80 an ounce. Light sweet crude is trading at $80.05 a barrel. The Dow closed down 40 points at 14,047. The Nasdaq was up 6 and the S&P 500 was even. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
Yes, indeed. 6.5 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. This is The Horn. And we're going to go to the phone in just a minute. We're joined by a very special guest this evening. At least it's evening here. It's still early afternoon on the left coast, and heaven only knows what time it is in Bombay. But you know what? That's the miracle of the internets. Nothing like being global. We're joined in just a moment by Jack Thomas. Mr. Thomas is the man who coined the phrase non-normie, and he defines that as a person who is fueled by anger and controlled by hate. He came to his conclusions after what I think could be fairly described as a life's journey, trying to work through various phases of recovery, including ongoing recovery in Al-Anon, working the 12 steps, working with his sponsor. Among other things, he's worked with Alateen and run an Alateen organization in Torrance, California for 3 years. And he's worked with a codependency recovery group. And his question, or his thesis, I suppose, would be properly stated that if stored and ungrieved, this is information that was provided to me by his publicist, if stored and ungrieved, unprocessed anger was the basis for people becoming emotionally non-normal, why would they cling to it if it was destroying them psychologically? The answer Mr. Thomas found after years of probing the hidden agendas and psyches, of thousands of emotionally non-normal people that he encountered. And he, Mr. Thomas, now defines various and sundry groups, peoples, philosophies, thought processes as normie versus non-normie. He has a website, I believe, Mr. Thomas, unless I am mistaken, it is nonnormie.com. Is that correct?
That's correct, Bob.
Mr. Thomas, thank you very much for taking time to join us this evening. Of course, we're discussing this evening your writings regarding the current controversy regarding remarks primarily by Bill O'Reilly and I guess ancillarily by Rush Limbaugh. You take the position, do you not, that they are being unfairly treated in the American media?
Yes, I do, Bob. What I think is they've been blown up out of proportion. I listened to both people, you know, in the broadcast that they did, and I listened to the entire context of it, and I really do think that it's merely a gotcha mentality with these people, that they're hanging on to a little part of it, and they're blowing it out of proportion.
Okay, I think that establishes the ground for our conversation. Let's back up then a little bit and talk about these definitive terms that you've developed, normie versus non-normie. Can you give us a little bit of background on that, please?
Sure, I can, Bob. And first of all, the term normie comes directly out of Alcoholics Anonymous. They refer to everyone who's outside of the program, who doesn't need the program, as a normie. And how the term non-normie came about was, I was talking to an alcoholic one time during the break, And I was asking him what the term meant, and he was explaining it to me, and I said, well, you know, I hate to tell you this, but by inference, then, that makes all of us guys in here in the program non-normies. And he kind of laughed and said, I guess you're right. And the term stuck as a result of that conversation. So when I developed my program later on, after working with these people for about 18 years, you know, I always kid around. I said that I've been working with the people in AA and Al-Anon and Alateen for 1 year longer than Robert Stroud, the Birdman Alcatraz, did at Alcatraz studying canaries. And he came up with some pretty interesting research, and I think I have too. And one of the things that I found when we peeled away all the emotional layers, I don't care whether the person was addicted to alcohol or obsessions or whatever the case may be, if they were emotionally non-normal, when we peeled back the layers, we always found the same problem, and that is the storage of anger ever since youth, and usually starting in their dysfunctional family when they were about 8 years of age.
Now, you've taken that that concept of, and you've expanded it, I guess, what would we say, socioculturally?
Yeah, let me explain that real quickly. Tracking the people and the results of the dysfunction, I find that they'll do one of two things with the anger. You know, when you start storing anger, you know, the psyche, Bob, is not a bottomless pit for storing it. So what happens a lot of times, and this is one of the reasons why we have such a tremendous drug problem right now in the high schools, is they get to high school and they've got this agony that they're in from all of this stored anger. In fact, one of the things we used to do in Alateen was to help them get rid of it through working the 12 steps. But those that don't, they either do one of two things. They either self-medicate, that's your alcohol, your drugs, your sex, or else they displace it in some way. And I always use the five C's, and that's the crutches, the cult, the crime, crises, and causes. And causes the one that that I center on, you know, a lot of times in my website, because an awful lot of the people, and I'm sure you've seen them out on the picket line, you know, protesting this, that, or the other. They're very angry people, and they're displacing their rage with these icons that they've created and which to vent it on.
So now, in this column that I have in front of me that was provided by your publicist, you make a note that polar left non-normies have mass infiltrated the major concentrations of power in America, including but not limited to the Democrat Party, the media, the public schools, psychology, the colleges, the legal profession, and especially the courts. That's a pretty broad, sweeping indictment, Mr. Thomas.
You're right, Bob, and it is very broad. I am prepared to defend it, but, you know, one of the things you remember now, it wasn't that long ago, back in the 1920s, when we just had the reverse. Polar right was in charge of this country. And, you had the Ku Klux Klan parading down Pennsylvania Avenue and being applauded. You know, we had more polar rights controlling this country, and the ACLU, for example, was just coming into being in 1917 and was essentially, when it first started out, very tainted, you know, with communist sympathizers. And so as a result, they didn't have the world's greatest reputation. And so what happened was is that the polar right eventually got castigated and marginalized out to the fringes. Now the only time you see them is out here with the skinheads and in some of the radical cult groups like the Davidian the Branch Davidian cult and things like that, but you don't see them so much in politics anymore, and you sure don't see them in the media at all.
Well, there are a million places I want to go with this conversation, Mr. Thomas.
Yeah.
First of all, you listed that the courts, the schools, yada yada. Can we not also include religion in there?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, but you're going to find more polar right there than polar left.
Well, okay, so that's your distinction.
What's that?
That's your distinction, polar left versus polar right.
Yeah, exactly right. And religion is, you know, especially in the cults or the aberrant religions, the ones that require a charismatic leader, you know, with the full devotion to, you know, the Jim Jones type.
Or a Falwell or a Robertson. Yeah, that, yeah. The basic, the cult leaders.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, let me ask you this. There's a statement you refer to, and I got to admit, I was taken a bit aback by this. You refer to Rush Limbaugh in your column and Bill O'Reilly as normies. Now, on the one hand, you've got Rush Limbaugh, who, under the best of circumstances, is a recovering street drug addict. And Bill O'Reilly, who, you know, in verified, documented, sworn to court papers, tried to come on to a woman by suggesting that he wanted to use falafel to have sex with her.
Yeah, of course. That was not a proven charge. You know, that was just as a sworn statement.
He settled out of court over it, and he didn't take it to trial. He didn't challenge it.
Yeah, I know, but I you know, we don't have enough information on that to really go. We have to take him on face value. You know, and a lot of the times, you know, when you have people, you know, that have hidden or hypocritical stances, there's no way to judge them. We base it on the face value that we see on television and everything else.
But even Rush Limbaugh admitted that he was a drug addict. How can you call him a normie?
Well, for one thing, you know, remember something. We're dealing with painkiller drugs, which are a lot different than what we're dealing with crack cocaine, you know. And so as a result of that, he got addicted to something for relieving pain. And a lot of people have that are not what you call your typical addict. I'm not trying to defend Rush's use of drugs, believe me. I think that it's a terrible thing. But what I'm saying is that I've tested him, you know, on my non-normie test, and he comes around in the teens, and which is a good score.
Okay, well, let's go to the issue with regard to Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
You have asserted that he was taken out of context.
Yeah, exactly. I listened to that right before. Did you listen to it, by the way?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did, and I have the audio right here. So if you don't mind, let's go through it. Let me check real quick. It's a minute and 7 seconds long, so it won't take too awfully long, okay?
Yeah, that's okay. I've heard it about 20 times.
If you want me to pause it, just say so along the way, and I'll do it.
No problem. Go
okay, here we go.
I think it's getting better. I think black Americans are starting to think more and more for themselves. And they're getting away from the Sharptons and the Jacksons and the people trying to lead them into a race-based culture.
Okay, let's stop there for just a second, Mr. Mm-hmm. Thomas. That everyone else is focusing on the comment about Sylvia's in Harlem.
I know.
But that front-end comment is a little bit disturbing, too. Because when he says they're beginning to think for themselves... isn't there an assumption in there that at some point in the past, or apparently based on this conversation in the recent past, that African Americans either don't or are incapable of thinking for themselves politically?
Well, he was referring specifically to Sharpton and Jackson, and you know, the leaders, you know, the self-appointed leadership that has so dominated the black culture right now, and you know, there are many people you know, throughout the country, you know, notable people that like Walter Williams, for example, and David and Mr. Soul, who dispute that, but unfortunately they do control a lot of power, and I think that's what he was referring to in the context of his thing.
Well, I'm reminded of a printed statement that came out from Ron Paul some several years back and this was just a light that went on for me when I heard that. Where Ron Paul said that only about 5% of African Americans in this country are politically sensible.
Well, I don't put me in a position of defending Ron Paul. I certainly wouldn't do that.
Okay, but it struck me as being somewhat similar, but let's go on.
Sure.
You know, let's try to figure it out. Look, I can make it. If I work hard, get educated, I can make it. You know, I was up in... Harlem a few weeks ago, and I actually had dinner with Al Sharpton, who is a very, very interesting guy, and comes on a factor a lot, and then I treated him to dinner because he's made himself available to us, and I felt that I wanted to take him up there, and we went to Sylvia's, a very famous restaurant in Harlem. I had a great time, and all people up there, tremendously respectful. They all watched the factor. You know, when Sharpton and I walked in, it was like big commotion and everything, but everybody was very nice, and I couldn't get over the fact that there was no difference between Sylvia's restaurant and any other restaurant in New York City. I mean, it was exactly the same. Even though it's run by blacks, primarily black patronship, it was the same. And that's really what the society is all about now here in the USA. There's no difference. There's no difference.
Okay, that's... I assure you, Mr. Thomas, I didn't monkey with that audio. I didn't do anything to it.
No, I believe you have heard
that's not out of context.
Mm-hmm.
That is really, really, really what he said.
Yeah, I know.
How is that not reprehensible?
Well, first of all, number one, is that, you know, consider the fact that Bill O'Reilly, you know, goes out of his way to have black guests. He continuously has Juan Williams, Al Sharpton, and recently had Jesse Jackson on. And then consider the fact also of who is dominantly his audience. His audience is practically all white. He's speaking to whites, and there's something that was left out of this conversation, by the way, I want to insert it here, is this story of his grandmother. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did. I didn't want to take ten minutes running the audio. But he talks about how his grandmother was afraid of black people.
Exactly. And so what you have to do is you have to take this entire conversation in context. And he's talking to white America, and he's saying to them, in essence, all the fears that you have, all the fears like my grandmother that you have, are not real. They're in your head. And so it may sound bad, for example, to someone who is, say, taking a different position than Bill. But if you look at it in the context of his audience, it's really not as bad. And even Juan Williams said that. He asked Juan on that specifically, and Juan agreed with him.
So I understand your point. O'Reilly's demographic is high 60s, 70s, 80-year-old Americans. And it's like putting a little wet tobacco on a bee sting and trying to pull the sting out.
Yeah, he's trying to alleviate their fears.
But by the same token, then, while that may be his demographic, Mr. Thomas, the people out here who aren't part of that demographic, who aren't walking around America terrified of the Negro, can you see where that is, where it's offensive in the extreme, or condescending, or patronizing?
Well, let me give you a quote from Jesse Jackson, for example. When Jesse's not on the air and he's out speaking at high schools, he talks to his black audience and he says, now, if you're on a dark street and you hear footsteps behind you and you get worried and you turn around and you see that it's white people coming up and they're holding a Bible in their hand, don't you feel a little sense of relief rather than having about three or four black guys that look like they're from the hood? And they all agree. Now, he would never say that publicly, but he's been quoted in his high school talks talking that way. Don't you think that's a little condescending?
But again, isn't he speaking to his own audience?
Yes, and so is Bill. That's what my point.
So we can castigate Jesse Jackson and Bill O'Reilly equally and call them for their patronizing or condescending comments with regard to the greater picture of society as a whole.
No, I don't really believe that. See, the whole problem is we don't have enough discussion of race that's open. And if we had more of it, we would probably be a lot closer together. The trouble is whites right now, and I'm sure Bill O'Reilly's now one of them, is more and more afraid to discuss it because they get pounced on. Slightest infraction.
Is it possible that that's not a discussion that Bill O'Reilly can lead?
Well, It's got to be done somewhere, and it's got to be done everywhere. It's not like it's his job. The point is it's everybody's job. It's my job. It's your job. It's his job.
I understand your position, Mr. Thomas, but I'm having a little bit of a hard time with it. It was just like any normal restaurant, except it was run by black people, or whether it's Rush Limbaugh getting on the air on the public airwaves and telling an African American caller to call me back when you get the bone out of your nose.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh yes. And
not a part of my article.
No. I'm just these are simply examples because I catalog this kind of thing. Rush Limbaugh asking why wanted posters in the post office all look like Jesse Jackson.
I have not heard any of those, but so I'd much rather stick with what I do know.
Well, sure, I understand that, but I think what I'm trying to establish is that there is a greater there's a greater spectrum or panoply, if you will, of the right wing race comments that have a greater context. You talk about taking things out of context. This is the context in which they exist.
Yeah, but Bob, remember one thing. You don't hear the black outrage on this thing that you heard with Don Imus. Have you heard Al Sharpton? Sharpton, for example, out with a megaphone picketing in front of O'Reilly's studio. It's just not happening. Most of the outrage is coming from the white America.
Okay, so, and I assume that it's your position that, that's white liberal America.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is kind of going without saying. And so what I'm saying is that I think that white liberal America is trying to be sensitive for the blacks when they're not bothered by it as much as you think they should be.
Okay, well, we've got African-American callers to this program, and I've gotten the emails and the...
No, I'm talking about the public personas. I'm talking about the Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons, the usual suspects, you know, that brought Don Imus down, you know, after Media Matters, revealed it.
And I take it that you really do have a problem with Media Matters.
Well, Media Matters, for example, the major problem I have is that they have so many distortions that I've tracked over the years. Some of the stuff is pretty good, but they do have a tendency, you know, and I find them very anger-based, and that's the reason why I refer to them as non-normies, because all non-normies are very anger-based. This is how they displace their rage, but with going after things outside of themselves.
Well, in light of the fact that there is no outlet on terrestrial radio, we operate on the Internet because, frankly, media ownership is such that a liberal progressive program cannot get a foothold in terrestrial radio. As a liberal and a progressive, I understand the anger because we have been vilified and castigated by the right-wing people like Limbaugh for going on 25 years now. I mean, you've got people like Glenn Beck, who's, and I know it's not part of the article, so, but this is just the general discussion. You've got people like Glenn Beck who refers to Mrs. John Edwards as a prostitute and her illness as a prostitute to Senator Edwards. The list is almost endless.
You're never going to get me defending that type of comment.
But this is
I don't like bad comments on either side of the aisle.
But what I'm trying to get to, Mr. Thomas, is that there is a disparity. You have identified what you define as a great deal of anger coming from an organization like Media Matters. But there's a 25-year history of anger and hate and vitriol that pours out on almost a 24-hour-a-day basis from the right wing.
Well, yeah, are you referring to Glenn Beck?
Well, whether it's Glenn Beck, it's Limbaugh, it's O'Reilly, it's Hannity.
I've never really heard Rush come from an anger base. I've heard him use a lot of sarcasm, but I haven't... I don't hear any anger. You know.
Well, with regard to the phony soldiers comment, I've got the audio of that too.
When he's talking about the issues, I'm not talking about a response to an attack. You know, obviously anybody's going to be angry on that.
But he went to his website, edited his comments out so his readers wouldn't see it, and then edited the audio on his website as well. That's dishonest.
Well, I can honestly say that I have no, privilege in that particular arena. I don't know.
I take it from the sound of things that you're a fairly conservative individual. I'm a very, very liberal individual. I'm very progressive. You and I aren't screaming at each other.
And I'm not that type of person either.
So the dialogue can be had.
Oh, yeah.
There is poison. And you use the normie versus non-normie dichotomy. I just call it poison in the American body politic. And so, you know, as you look at what you identify as left-wing or non-normie anger, Mr. Thomas, I would like to hope that out of a sense of, intellectual honesty and curiosity, you might go back and examine the hate and vitriol that has poured out of the right wing for 25 years.
Well, actually, I do write a lot of articles on the polar right, too, as a matter of fact. And like I say, I find most of them in religion. You know, it wasn't that long ago I was writing about our good friend, polar right Reverend Fred Phelps, up here in Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas. And but on the other hand, I wrote about Michael Berg, the father of decapitated journalist Nick Berg. You know,
mm-hmm.
he wanted to, have a coffee and tea with the people that killed his son. You know, I mean, those are two extremes that I talk about a great deal on nonnormie.com, because you know what we're lacking in those areas is common sense, and common sense is usually where normality is.
And normality, it's not subject to a concrete definition, is it?
Well, you know, the one thing that I have been able to do is I've been able to define just about everything that I do. And what I do is I say that a non-normie is an emotionally driven person. A normie is a non-emotionally driven person.
In a way, you could go back to the ancient Greek dichotomy between the Apollonians and the Dionysians then. Because the Apollonians were very cold and very rational and very reasonable versus the Dionysians, who were driven by emotion, by religious fervor, that kind of thing.
The main thing, you know, here is whether which comes first, are the emotions subjugated to the brain, or is it vice versa? In fact, that's one of the things we run into in AA and Al-Anon and Alateen all the time, is we're dealing with people that got into trouble originally because their emotions were driving their entire psyche.
What happens when a rational response engenders profound emotional response?
You just hit it right there. The thinking came first, right? That's what's supposed to happen. We're supposed to be able to curb our emotions and circle them around our thinking, not the other way around.
Just by example, and I know we run over a little bit, but I'm enjoying the conversation. I hope you are as well. When you look at something like children blown into their constituent parts in Iraq.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
When you look at something like children being blown up in Iraq in bombing raids and things like that, and it appeals to you on a visceral level, and you try to respond to it rationally, reasonably, and you say, you know, that obviously this is evil.
Yeah,
this is bad.
Exactly. You know, in fact, you hit the on a point that I meant to mention earlier. If I could bring it up right now, the only cure for this is grieving. There's something. It's a lost art, you know, in society today. And we teach this in Alateen. Teach the kids how to grieve their losses, because it's the reaction to loss and disappointment through anger that caused the problem to begin with. So we teach them how to grieve.
Okay, and I've got no argument with that whatsoever. The question becomes one of, however, when people who say, you know, go to a protest to protest the Iraq War because of the massive human tragedy that's involved, because it's a rational, it's a reasonable, intellectual understanding of what has happened, and they are they're opposed by people who say you hate America. Or, you know, move to Iraq, or America, love it or leave it, or you don't support the troops. That engenders anger, doesn't it? I mean, it would...
Well, yes, Bob, but I'm not going to broad brush every single person on the protest line, but you know as well as I do the type of people I'm talking about within the protest. You have some very, very intellectually sound people that are not non-normies out protesting various causes. But you see, there's a difference between the person who is emotionally driven, because their thinking does not come first. It comes secondary. And when you have a conversation with them, they usually talk in bumper sticker language.
Okay. I'm on the air 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week, and I can tell you that I try to remain cool and rational, and there are times that I just want to shut the microphone off and weep because of the things that I see. And
I understand.
And I can't define myself as being somehow socioculturally or psychologically aberrant for what I think is a rational response to a horrible and irrational situation.
Well, we're not here to diagnose you, Bob. That's for sure.
This is a 3-hour couch 5 nights a week. I get as much from my audience as they get from me. Trust me. But Mr. Thomas, I've enjoyed our conversation. I hope you'd be comfortable coming
too, Bob.
I hope you'd be comfortable coming back sometime, and I wish you the very best.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for inviting me.
My pleasure. And give our best to Dale, please.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay, take care.
Bye now.
Jack Thomas of nonnormie.com. Wow. A couple of folks on the line here. Let's just go straight to one of them. Hi, who have I got?
Oh, hi, Bob. It's Joe Vecchio.
Hey, Joe.
Fine. How are you?
I'm okay. How about you?
Okay. Well, what do you, I just came back from job search a little while ago, so I thought I'd give you a call and see how things are going. I assume Agnes is busy with the kids.
Yeah, she's being mom.
He's being mom, which is the most important thing a person can do.
We're liberals with family values, Joe. What can I say?
Exactly right. How many wives has Bill Clinton had?
That would be one.
That would be one. How many wives does Rudy Giuliani have?
I'll have to take off my shoes to get past 10. Is he on 4 or 3? I don't know.
He's on his third now. Rush Limbaugh is on his third, or did he just divorce his third? It's hard for me.
Yeah, the third was divorced, and right.
But you know, there is a real reason I called tonight, is that I have some apologies to make, and I would like to make them.
Well, I don't know that you do, but if you feel you must, you must.
Well, in light of Rush Limbaugh's apology, quote unquote, for saying about phony soldiers, I felt some apologies of my own were in order. So if it's okay with you,
okay,
I would very much like to make these apologies.
Absolutely.
And these apologies are for the following people. They're to those who gave their lives throughout this country's history for the cause of freedom, to those soldiers currently serving in combat and in support missions in Iraq, Afghanistan, and all over the world, to the people of Iraq and Afghanistan, most of whom, until we invaded, never had any animosity towards us in particular, Americans in general, and who really want nothing more out of life than to support themselves and leave a better world for their children, much like everyone else in the world, and to the future generations who will have to pay the price for the actions of the United States government, I apologize to you. I apologize to you on behalf of President George W. Bush and Vice President Richard Cheney, who were the ones primarily responsible for you being where you are today, cowardly men who decided to take us to war for reasons of their own, yet when the time came for them to sacrifice, they found better things to do. I apologize to you on behalf of the leadership of the Republican Party and their primary financial backers, who exploited your sense of duty, of loyalty, and patriotism, and used it to increase their profits or to further their own ambitions and put the success of their political party and corporations ahead of your safety and well-being. I apologize to you on behalf of the college Republicans, phony patriots who should be there fighting with you so they could learn firsthand how horrible war is and why it should never be rushed into, but who instead have chosen to let you fight their battles while they plan their futures. To quote a soldier from another war, it's their guts and your blood. I apologize to you on behalf of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Neil Bortz, Ann Coulter, and many other media figures who have profited greatly from this war and who claim to support you and who also have never served or never had a desire to serve and who will ruthlessly attack even the most dedicated veterans who dare to say that you should not fight or die for their vanity. I apologize.